Welcome. Good to be here with everyone. As Faith said, if you can have your camera on, that would be really great, having a sense of community. I'm going to just have all the video people on my screen. And if you want me to see you, then put your camera on. And as we start, just before we start, something I like to do is take a look at everyone on the screen. Wish them well. Just a little bit of a Zoom meta from all over this. And then know that they're sending those well wishes to you as well. So let them in. Just relax and receive. Know that there's some metta coming to you too.
James, I'm sorry. Quick question.
Yes.
I'm upside down. It's really true. No, I'm upside down, Deborah Bernhardt. How do I turn myself on the screen? Does anybody know?
I think turn your device so the camera is facing you in a different way. If you're on a phone, turn your phone again. Keep on going. Oh,
it's a computer.
I don't know. Yeah. So
sorry for interrupting.
Okay. I'm going to just invite everyone to mute. So now that we've connected that way, let's settle in and have a practice session right now. So I invite you, wherever you are, to come into your body and feel the body connecting with the earth. Let yourself feel that grounding. As we talk about groundlessness later today, you can always feel the earth underneath you and feel that connection. Let yourself give in to gravity. Just relax. You might take a few deeper breaths and as you breathe in calm. As you breathe out, let go and relax. And then let the breath find its own natural rhythm. Let life breathe you. Let the breath breathe you. Nothing to force, nothing to make happen. And simply know that you're alive and breathing. This can be your home base, your anchor to the present moment, whenever you're lost or drifted away. For some people, the posture might be a more supportive primary object. You see what works for you. But just coming into the present, and let the mind be relaxed and spacious. Nothing you need to make happen. You don't need to make the moment happen. It's happening all by itself. And as this open, spacious presence receives the moment, whatever is arising is simply the next thing to notice. And noticing it with kindness, with interest, being present for your life, and with a relaxed awareness, not straining or forcing, just allowing, receiving with a kind presence. When you notice the mind has wandered, no need to judge. Don't take it personally. It's just what minds do. And appreciate that you're here once again. And then let the return be done with that same kindness and presence, and begin once again. What's happening right now? Let the mind be relaxed and at ease, receiving the moment just as it is. Let yourself come out gently and slowly. When the meditation ends, no judgment, no report card, no critique about how you did or didn't do. You just put in your time sincerely. That's good enough. So, I'm going to share some thoughts about the topic of groundlessness. It's an interesting term, isn't it? Sounds a bit unsettling, but when you understand perhaps how to work with it, it can be a doorway to freedom. And these days, you might be feeling this sense of groundlessness, as if the world is topsy-turvy and not very settled and secure. I'm just remembering Alan Watts having this wonderful book, the title of which says it all, The Wisdom of Insecurity. So I want to start out with a teaching from a sutta that is in the Pali Canon called the Maghiya Sutta, M-E-G-H-I-Y-A, Maghiya Sutta. And the Maghiya was this new monk who had recently joined the order, and it just turned out that he was to accompany the Buddha for a few days, just the two of them alone in the forest. Pretty good deal. Can you imagine that, being a new monastic and you get to be with the Buddha, have your own private audience? And he goes on alms round he comes back, and on his alms round, he goes by himself. He sees this fabulous mango grove, gorgeous, perfect to meditate. And he goes back to the Buddha and he says, I found this wonderful meditation area. I'd really like to practice. And the Buddha gets a sense that this guy is pretty new. And so he says, well, you know, why don't you just keep me company? The two of us are here alone, and keep me company. Maybe you go some a later time. Maghiya says, oh, it's such a good meditation spot. Please let me go. The Buddha says, you know, in a little while, in a few days, others will join us. And so how about if you just keep me company? Maghiya asks the proverbial third time, which is the charm. And he says, you've done what you've needed to do. I still have work to do. Please let me go. So the Buddha can't refuse after the third time. And he says, the classical line, now is the time to do as you see fit. So go and practice. Maghiya goes to the mango grove, sits, and he is amazed by the fact that his mind is filled with thoughts of sense desire, ill will, and cruelty, the big three. And he goes back and he says, you'll never guess what happened. This is, he doesn't quite say it like this in the Pali Canon, but he says, how amazing. This is what happened in my mind. And the Buddha said, oh yes, well, when you're new to practice, there are some supports that will help you before you go into deep intensive practice on your own. And he gives him five different aspects of support for practice, mentioning them briefly: like-minded friends, sila, precepts of good conduct, wise speech, which he separates out from the sila, cultivating wholesome states and weakening unwholesome states. And for the purposes of this talk, I wanted to underscore the last of these five. He says, if there's one thing to keep in mind, this is it. A continual reflection on impermanence, on the fact that everything changes. He says, if you don't remember anything else, just keep that in mind. Probably mindfulness isn't a bad thing to keep in mind as well, but this was in this sutta, this is what he said. Just remember that things change. And this is a quote from the Buddha. The perceiving of impermanence developed and frequently practiced removes all sense attachment, removes all attachment for material existence, all grasping for becoming, all ignorance, removes and abolishes all conceit of I am, sense of separate self. So seeing deeply into this truth of impermanence on many levels, this is the key. It's one of the three characteristics of impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and the selfless nature of reality. But impermanence is the essence that leads to the other two. So in this world of change, when you take a look, you see there's nothing to hold on to because nothing is going to be lasting, will give you lasting happiness. And it's really going from the second noble truth, the cause of suffering is attachment, to the third noble truth, the end of suffering, is letting go of that attachment. Mm-hmm. But even when we know better, this isn't always easy to remember. In fact, it's often very difficult to remember. And you might have been practicing for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and you probably get caught every now and then in attachment. If you don't, well, that's, you're getting up to the higher stages of enlightenment. And even if you've been sharing this for many years, you know, you still can get caught. Last year, I had something something happened. There was some news about there was going to be some change in the way things were in this particular situation that I was in. And it was shocking and was like, whoa, that's not fair. How could they do that? And then I remembered, wait, they're suffering here. What's going on? How can I hold this in a different way? Okay, I'm going to take, this is my practice. You know, it's easy to practice when things are going swimmingly, but when stuff hits the fan, that's when you say, okay, there's something around here for me to take a look at. How can I hold it wisely? So as I practiced and allowed all the feelings and everything to be there and realized this is the way it is, there was a shift in my relationship to the whole experience. Because feelings and emotions and reactions, they're part of being human. And we all probably know that if you've been practicing for a while, that if you can't just be mindful of what's here, to hold it with loving kindness, hold it with compassion, and that can be helpful. And I'll share this poem that I love by Jennifer Wellwood called Unconditional about this piece before we get to the groundlessness. Willing to experience aloneness, I discover connection everywhere. Turning to face my fear, I meet the warrior who lives within. Opening to my loss, I gain the embrace of the universe. Surrendering into emptiness, I find fullness without end. Each condition I flee from pursues me. Each condition I welcome transforms me and becomes itself transformed into its radiant jewel-like essence. I bow to the one who has made it so, who has crafted this master game. To play it is pure delight, to honor its form, true devotion. That's Unconditional by Jennifer Wellwood. Each condition I flee from pursues me. Each condition I welcome transforms me. If you can remember that. But the most common response that most of us have is resistance. Avoiding what's uncomfortable, avoiding what we don't like. And when we realize that things are out of control, sometimes this is what is called groundlessness. And it can be scary, but it's also a deep gift of practice when we can relate to it in a different way. This is from a famous Tibetan master. He says, life is like jumping out of a plane. The bad news is you're falling through the air, nothing to hang on to, no parachute. The good news is there's no ground. So it's not like you become splat, that's the end, that's it. No, life keeps on unfolding, but we get very dysregulated and thinking, this is it, uh-oh, I'm stuck now and I don't know if there'll ever be a way out. And you resist reality. This is from Pema Chodron. Probably many of you are have appreciated her teachings over the years. It's not impermanence per se, or even knowing we're going to die, that is the cause of suffering. Rather, it's our resistance to the fundamental uncertainty of our situation, groundlessness. Our discomfort arises from all of our efforts to put ground under our feet, to realize our dream of constant okayness. When we resist change, it's called suffering. What's the experience of groundlessness for you? When things seem out of your control, just think, maybe you've encountered something recently when things are out of control, either in your personal life or in the news, and you think, whoa, this is really getting intense. How do you respond? So just think for a few moments. I'm not going to take a conversation now. I'm going to open up the chat box. And I want to ask you, how do you try to get ground under your feet when you feel that unsettled? Let's just see. Just put it in the chat box for a moment. Being a knower, planning. Good. Make a to-do list. Pause, breathe, feel my body. When something seems imperfect, I meditate, focus on the breath. Walk in nature. I try to take a breath and put it in perspective. Yes, beautiful. I pause and return to the present. Lovely. Stand barefoot on the ground. Drop into my body. Okay. I'm going to continue, so I'm going to close the chat for a moment now. Pema Chodron continues, and she says, when we can completely let go and not struggle against it, when we can embrace the groundlessness of our situation and relax into its dynamic quality, that's called enlightenment. Instead of thinking of these feelings as bad, we can think of them as road signs or barometers that tell us when we're in touch with groundlessness. And then we can see our feelings for what they really are, the gateway to liberation, an open doorway to freedom from suffering. We have a choice. This is what I want you to really understand. We have a choice. We can spend our whole life suffering because we can't relax with how things really are, or we can relax and embrace the open-endedness of the human situation. Have you ever had the experience of just opening to the experience without trying to get ground under your feet? Just seeing, ah, this is the way things are. That means letting go of how you'd like things to be and not trusting that everything's going to work out fine, but trusting that awareness will meet the moment. It always has. And if we get dysregulated and think, oh my goodness, I won't be able to make it, we forget all the times in our life when we've faced a situation like that and we got through somehow, or things changed. So it's remembering, while you're in that experience of groundlessness, that there's no ground and you won't be splatting, that life will continue to unfold, and all the times that you've done it in the past, and that you can trust that awareness will meet that moment in the future. Because if you're worried about the future now, you will likely be worried about the future then. And the more you practice being here in the present now, the more likely you'll be able to meet the present then. So this is all about seeing, in this world of impermanence, that there's nothing we can really rely on as far as controlling experience. We can have input, and I'm all for having input and making wise change. But it's really about letting go of what we can't change. That famous serenity prayer, grant me the courage to change the things I can, the serenity to accept the things I can't, and the wisdom to know the difference. This is where letting go comes in, the letting go of the control that you never had in the first place. And this is a great practice. A couple of years ago, I was, I'm in this group that meets monthly, has met for, 13 or 14 years now, my NeuroDharma group, with some very wonderful people in it. And one of the members in this group is named Edward Lewis, and he was he's a benefactor for everyone at Spirit Rock in the early days. He was a key figure and the project manager and on the board and making things happen, and a lot of skill and wisdom as we built the center. And he now lives in Thailand, and he's now just turned 90, but he was coming on to his 88th birthday. And I said, Edward, it's going to be your birthday. How about giving a talk on what you've learned all of these years of practice? He said, okay, I will. And he gave a lovely talk. One thing in this talk has stayed with me since then, and I'll share the transmission I got from him to you. He said, you know, I was walking around my house. He lives in Thailand, as I said, and he said, and there is this very expensive vase, and in my lack of balance and clumsiness, I bumped against it, and it smashed to 1,000 pieces. Most of my life, my response would have been, oh no. This time it was, oh. And he said, going from, oh no, to, oh, was 40 years of practice. Oh no. Oh, this is what's happening. So this is what we're called to do, what Alan Watts called the wisdom of insecurity, realizing this is what life is. A couple of years ago, here's another teaching that I got from another friend, a good friend, Terry Patton, who was also in this Neurodharma group, who received a diagnosis of a terminal illness on his 70th birthday, and he had 7 months to live. And he gave a series of talks. He's a wonderful wisdom teacher, writer, with quite a following. And he gave a talk. He gave a series of talks on mortality. And the last talk he gave was from his bed, his hospital bed that they had in his house. It was a week before he died. And there's a clip of this talk that I love. And he was asked, how do you feel? What are you going through? You're near the end. Are you angry? Are you scared? Are you battling? And what are you going through? He said, I have those feelings that are naturally coming up. But he says, I don't want to waste my time being in resistance to reality. Reality wins every time. And my job, I am ennobled by opening up to reality as it is, with grace and wisdom and an open heart. I don't want to waste my time being in resistance to reality. Reality wins every time. I want to open up to it with grace and wisdom and an open heart. That not resisting reality, which is another way of saying the profound quality of equanimity. Things are the way they are. Or as Ajahn Sumedho would say, it's like this. This is how it is. And now, how can I respond wisely? And the Buddha very clearly suggested practicing more and more, opening up to the truth of being alive in this human form, in the five remembrances or five daily reflections. In one discourse, he says, think frequently, and now it's become known as the daily reflections or remembrances, open to the fact that this body is not beyond aging. If you live long enough, this body will become sick. This body will die. Everything and everyone near and dear to me, I will be separated from. And my actions and my habits are my true belongings. How I respond to life, that is how my karma is being created. But he says, think about this every day, old age, sickness, death, and loss, not to bum you out, not to depress you, but just to accept, okay, this is part of what it means to be human. And the more we can do that, the more we can accept and embrace the way things are, the more there is a coming into harmony and trust and surrender with the unfolding of life. And it's a doorway to freedom. This is from another Tibetan master, Gendun Rinpoche. Happiness cannot be found through great effort and willpower, but is already here in relaxation and letting go. Only our searching for happiness prevents us from seeing it. Wanting to grasp the ungraspable, you exhaust yourself in vain. As soon as you relax this grasping, space is here, open, inviting, and comfortable. When we understand impermanence, we see the poignancy of life. There's this concept in Japan called wabi-sabi, the poignancy of impermanence, the notion of wabi-sabi, like the cherry blossom. It is beautiful because of its impermanence, not in spite of it. It's more exquisite for the inevitability of loss. So the gift of opening to groundlessness, coming to terms with the truth of impermanence, there are some gifts to be in alignment with truth, the appreciation of this present moment, this preciousness of this present moment, and courage and fearlessness. This might seem paradoxical, but when you see this is it, and you're not playing it safe, then besides just accepting the way things are, then you can engage in a wise response. You know that expression, the Japanese, the koan, you know, what is the meaning of all of this practice? An appropriate response. And with that fearlessness that's aligned with the truth and sees what you can change and what you can't change, then you become fully who you are, not playing it small, and fearlessly engaging in the world. I'll read to you a favorite passage from Bhikkhu Bodhi, the great translator of the Pali Canon, most of the long books in the Pali Canon, the middle length discourse sayings, and all the other big books are from Bhikkhu Bodhi, who also is an incredibly inspiring activist. And this is what he says: the special challenge facing the Dharma in our age is to stand up as an advocate for justice in the world, a voice of conscience for those victims of social, economic, and political injustice who cannot stand up and speak for themselves, including planet Earth. This, in my view, is a deeply moral challenge, marking a watershed in the modern expression of Buddhism, and I believe it points in a direction that the Dharma should take if it is to share in the Buddha's ongoing mission to humanity. That's A Challenge to Buddhists by Bhikkhu Bodhi. So the flip side of groundlessness is seeing, okay, let me show up fully for my life, understanding what's not in my control and understanding what I can participate in and let go when things aren't going my way, but showing up with a courageous heart. And this is what I think we're all being called to do at this time. Joanna Macy, probably most of you are familiar with, she calls this active hope, identifying the outcomes we hope for and then playing our part in bringing them about. Focusing on what we deeply long for and then proceeding to take determined steps in that direction, becoming an active participant in bringing about what we hope for. and realizing that we can do this with grace and without fighting life. So I want to share with you a page from Be Here Now that has been a very powerful one for me to talk about understanding and moving through the world with this understanding of groundlessness. This is, can you see this on the screen? Yeah. This is Shiva's Dance of Life, singing and dancing and insurance and savings account and job and responsibility. Shiva's Dance of Life. Do you do it from or do you do it from Do you surf through it all or do you carry it around like a load? Shiva's Dance of Life. You probably have seen statues of Shiva dancing through life. Shiva, who is the representative of transformation. It's all changing. Do you do it from unk and this isn't fair and I hate the world and I'm out of here or I'm splitting? Or do you dance through it and say, this is what I have to offer. This is how I can move through this world with grace and opening to reality and courage and fearlessness and letting go when it's nothing I can do and time to let go. So I offer this to you as a reflection to just see and know that in every moment you have a choice. You will forget as I forget, but every moment you have a choice how to meet this moment with clarity, with acceptance, with love, with compassion, and with courage and wisdom. That is the gift of groundlessness. And to see that you can play that dance, and instead of doing it from unk and resisting, which is just more pain and suffering for you, but with grace and harmonizing with life and sharing your love well. So I'll stop here, and before we open it up to some conversation and questions, I want to remind, as Faith asked me to, that we this Sangha gathering operates on Dana, and I so appreciate your Dana, and Sangha Live appreciates it. They get a good portion out of it, and I get some of it. And there's the information, I guess, somewhere in the information. I also want to mention that the Joy Course, as was said at the beginning, and maybe some of you weren't around, starts this Tuesday, and Sangha Live members receive a special discount, and I'm putting this in the chat box now. Oh, no, not Diana. Wait, hold on a second. Everyone in the meeting. So if you go to awakeningjoy.info, or just go to Awakening Joy, it'll be there. And then sign up for the course. And it says at some point, have a coupon. If you put in the code SanghaLive, oh, that should be $299. Sorry, SanghaLive, $299. then you'll get a discount. And it's fun. We go through it for 5 months, and it's cultivating wholesome states. It's like stealth Dharma, but inclining towards well-being. So I invite you to do that. And now we can open it up to conversation, questions, and any comments about the talk or about practice. And oh, I'll open up, have to open up the chat. Oh yeah, it is opened up already. So if you have a comment, you can raise your hand using the reactions box. And Faith is going to bring you up and we can speak together. Otherwise, you can put something in the chat box and she can read it. But we'd love to see people on screen if they're willing to. Ah, Dia. Hello. And you got to unmute yourself. Oh, can you, oh wait, ask to unmute. There you go. Hi.
I was trying to unmute myself and it said I couldn't.
Oh, okay. I realized, yeah, that we had the setting on a different way. There you go. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for the beautiful talk. I'm really moved by it. And I'm deep in a practice of impermanence and in my own prayer of saying to myself, I see you, Mara, to keep recognizing how fear and doubt and death are visiting. And I'm going through really big life transitions at the moment and surrendering to those and surrendering to the impermanence. I find myself in meditating and holding within myself awareness of a lot of pain and a lot of grief. And it feels like there isn't enough time to be in as much grief as I have with the changes that I have. And it feels so hard to trust those things because I feel like I should be grieving a little and then I should go out and get a job because that's one of the things that's changed, and or I should do this or I should do that. And that's where the planning comes in, or the desire to be like, okay, I have to go figure out and know what I'm doing now. Even though I believe that knowing is like trying to plan, it's all just sort of like, well, a good way to waste time. And so, yeah, I'm in this struggle with trusting what's coming up because it feels like it's just going to go on forever. Yeah.
You feel it right now. So let's just take a moment here. And you don't have to do anything or fix anything. Just allow. It's just a wave of feelings. Make space for them. Yeah, this is just part of being human. And let the wise part of you hold that part that needs comforting right now. You might also think of all the people in the world that are going through what you're going through right now. So you don't feel quite as alone. That's it. Just allow. Feel yourself sitting here on the ground, on the chair. What's it like in there right now?
Tightness in my throat, wanting to allow the tears and also not wanting to. Um, create a difficult experience for other people watching me cry.
Oh, you're just touching everyone's hearts. That's okay. Everybody can relate. So you might even take in all the caring and compassion coming your way. Just let it in. You're not alone here now, do you? We all know what that's like in our own way. Let's hold it with kind awareness. That's it. No need to get rid of anything. Just make space for it. How you doing now?
There's a peacefulness, like a weighted blanket on my body.
Beautiful. Let yourself enjoy that. Just enjoy the peacefulness. I'm enjoying it with you. We all are. Okay, and now feel yourself sitting there, getting grounded on your sofa. And when you're ready, come up back. So, just like you did, you don't have to do all your grieving at once. That's too much to ask, but you can do it in pieces. You can just feel it. You get made space for it, and then you came back to holding it calmly. So you do it like in trauma work, it's called pendulation. Maybe you know that. You touch it a little, and then you come back and get centered, or go for a walk, or do your planning, or doing whatever you need to do to get some space from this. Because when you get space, here's the paradox. When you're trying to plan and there's a lot going on and you're somewhat dysregulated, the wisdom isn't shining through. But when you allow, and the awareness has a very healing power if you can hold it kindly, the space from that tightness, then the planning is much more effective. Then you can listen to the truth instead of trying to figure it out. So you budget time for grieving, for feeling it fully. Okay, let's go for it. Welcome it. And when it's too much, go for a walk in nature, or put on some good music, or go for, take a hot bath, or whatever you need. And then the planning will be coming from a more connected, wiser place. And you will look back at this. Wow, that was intense. And I made it through. Like I made it through all the other ones. And hopefully that will give you courage and confidence for the next time. So this is a very important period in your practice. Just take it all as learning to grow and hold it all inside, not just for Dia, but for all of us. Okay, and good luck to you.
Thank you for all the lovely messages. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad you see and taking them in. Okay, bye bye. Let's see. Stuart, hi. And if you I don't know if you're willing to be seen, have your camera on.
Okay. Sorry, mate. I've got a terrible internet connection, I'm afraid. So I'll have to stick with audio if that's all right.
Okay.
Let's hear. Bit of a hard pivot here.
Okay.
It's a tricky one. A bit of context. Up until a few years ago, I thought meditation, all this stuff, bit new agey, bit out there for me. Was brought up very much in a way that, you know, men don't talk about feelings, you crack on, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
But so when I listen to you talk about this stuff, the overriding thing for me, bizarrely, is I've done a lot of bad stuff, arguably, in my life, as short as it is so far. And I feel like often I don't deserve to move past that. I don't deserve for that to be impermanent. I don't deserve to stop beating myself up about it a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm getting it. I'm not explaining that very well.
No, you got it across. I think I got it. Yeah. So your question is, how can you get beyond that and carry on with your practice?
I guess so. Yeah. How do you come to peace, I guess, with some of what you've done?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, I would recommend my book, Awakening Joy. That's what chapter 5 is, and me sharing about how I got through my some major mistakes in my life.
I'll be picking up a copy.
And this is something I think you have a lot of common ground with. Anybody not understand the question? We've all done things in our past that we regret. And the fact that it's making you cringe, it sounds like, is that so? Like, oh, I did
that's
this.
An understatement. Yeah.
That's an understatement. Yeah. Well, when I had to look at things in my life and I could give myself a hard time, and then it occurred to me, cringing is really a valuable sign because it means I'm no longer the person that could do that.
Mm.
I've changed. If you said, well, yeah, that's what people do, okay, and I'll do it tomorrow, that would be too sad. That would be unfortunate. But as one of my teachers says, as long as you're learning, there are no mistakes. And you can carry around your past for the rest of your life and feel guilty and feel not worthy of growing and learning. That would be unfortunate, wouldn't it? Or you can learn from what you've done and use it, I think of it as part of my bodhisattva training. I've made many mistakes in my life. I know what it's like to beat myself up. I know what it's like to go through hard times of regret. And I know what it's like to hold it in another way, because when I look back and I say, well, if I knew then what I know now, if I had more awareness, I wouldn't have done that. But I didn't. I couldn't have done it better. I didn't have enough wisdom and knowledge. Thank goodness I do. And now I can be there for people who've made mistakes and are having a hard time forgiving themselves, like you. So this is a very important part of practice, to heal from the past by understanding that the steward who did those things is no longer the steward who's talking right now. How amazing, how wonderful, how, what grace. You know that song, Amazing Grace, where the guy who wrote it saw that he once was lost and now he's found, was blind, but now I see. This is amazing grace, Stuart, and this is what you're being asked to learn. again, not just for yourself, but for everyone you encounter who is going through what you're going through right now.
Oh, making me emotional. That was really, yeah, I really appreciate it. Thank you, mate.
You're welcome. Well, if you're emotional, it means something got into that heart that's tender in there. Keep on accessing that tenderness. There's where the wisdom can shine through.
Thank you. Thank you, James.
Thanks. Deborah, hi. And you can unmute, and there you go. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. I have a lot to say, but I'm going to make it succinct.
Good. There might be other questions, but I want to hear what you have to say. Yeah.
Oh, that's why I'm saying that. I think it's simpler than I think. So I'm going to start with having a major total knee replacement surgery about 3.5 months ago. Uh-huh. And that was a choice. I was ready to do it on and on. And since then, I've noticed, maybe it's a gift. I don't know. I've been trying to control things. I oftentimes don't have patience for the amount of time this is going to take to heal.
Mm-hmm.
I trust, but don't trust whether I'll hike again, whether I'll play pickleball again, whether I'll, there's that part. I'm isolating from friends sometimes. Uh-huh. My trying to control things with, I want to exercise, but I can only do a small amount, and then I'm going to gain weight, and all these like fears. And
the question?
And then the other question is self-care.
What's that question? What to do with the fear and what to do with all of that and how to handle all that? Is there a question in that one, that first one?
Thank you for clarifying. I'm not sure. I'm all over the place. And the other thing is self-care. I really feel like it's silly, but I feel annoyed that I was, as a child, who taught us all about this self-care? And I'm like really kind of angry. Like, how do I do this all? I'm done.
Okay. So first, you've had full knee replacement. Yeah. Are you... If they didn't have anything like knee replacement surgery, what would your life be like then? And you just went along as you were. How would it be? Which would you prefer? Okay. Not having knee surgery?
I think the knee surgery I prefer.
Okay. So... there's another way of looking at this. One, you are in a time where somehow there's a miracle that they can replace a bad knee and you can walk without pain again. Wow.
Someday.
Someday. This is just 3 months out. There's a possibility, certainly better than the way it was going. Most of human history, they didn't have knee surgeries. And what's also true is it takes time. So this is a time for patience practice. And it's amazing that the body, given the right support, knows how to little by little heal itself. Another amazing blessing. Or you could say, oh, this is such a drag and this is taking time and I didn't learn self-care as a child or whatever. You have a choice. And if you can see how amazingly fortunate you are to have good medical care that can have knee surgery and that you can use this time to practice patience, you want to learn about self-care. You didn't have it as a kid. Here it is right now. But it requires patience and having metta towards your body instead of frustration towards it so that it can heal. That's what healing is about. And so notice how fear is in the driver's seat, because when fear is in the driver's seat, we cannot think clearly. So I'll tell you, maybe you've heard me say this before. We've been around for a while together. When fear is in the driver's seat, and I realize I put it in the passenger seat, I put a seatbelt around it. I don't want to throw it out of the car. It doesn't know any better. I put a helmet around it, figuratively in my mind, and I say, I honor you, but you don't get the keys to the car. I'm not letting fear run the show. And I let wisdom and clarity, and I let my practice of being here in the present moment as wisely as I can take over. And that's where you are right now. That's what your practice is about. You are in post-knee surgery practice, and I wish you the best with it. So, thank you. Let's see. And Pubang. Hi. I think you can unmute now. Ah, hello. Hi, this will have to be the last question because it's almost time to go. So, hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so I have this question. So I'm a freelancer, which means I work some of the time and I don't work some of the time. So mm-hmm. when I'm not working, I am in this like kind of state of uncertainty, and it's taken me a few years of practice to become kind of okay with it. I'm not totally 100% okay with it, but mm-hmm. When I'm not working, I have this like quite a strong urge to practice and to do long retreats. And yeah. But I also do notice that while I know that that would be one of the best uses of my time when I'm mm-hmm. not working, there is also this underlying, and I'm aware of it, I think of it also as a little bit of escapism from the situation of uncertainty of waiting for the next job.
What would be the alternative? What would you be doing that would be constructive and supportive for your well-being?
The other thing that I could do is continue writing my book, which I am writing. I do a lot of other things. Like I'm an illustrator, so I spend my time creatively all the time. I could do a few more skills in design or learn some programs. However, I also feel like I did a long retreat and I was on a path, basically. And I feel it would be a great opportunity. But there is also that feeling that, well, actually, I'm trying to retreat from reality, like sort of escape it a bit.
Got it. Okay. So first, being creative, as I was saying just a moment ago about fear, being creative takes a kind of spaciousness. It's hard to be creative and saying, I should be creative. No. Come on, get that creativity out. Squeezing it out doesn't work. So whatever you need for that allows some spaciousness and processing and feeling centered and balanced, know that that is supporting your creativity. And if you think of it as escapism, then you will be defeating yourself as far as not getting the benefit of the spaciousness and feeling your practice is not really the thing to do. But
I was thinking of going on a retreat, and that felt to me like I was trying to escape.
Okay. Well, the only the way to get in touch with the truth is not to figure it out what's the right thing to do, but to listen and feel if this is the right thing to do. I like the archetype of Milarepa, who always has his hand to his ear. He's listening to the truth. He's not figuring out what's the right thing to do. So you just listen to the truth. And know that there are times in between when you've had a shift and there's something next to happen, and we can be very impatient for the next thing. However, just like nature, it takes some patience to be in between. There's a kind of gestation period, and you need to let the land lie fallow before it can produce again. And we can get very impatient during that time, and it gets frustrating. Give yourself space and let the creativity and let the ideas and let the new course of action reveal itself. And that takes a patience and takes a listening to the
and
truth.
And also, sometimes it might feel counterintuitive, but like, you know, the mind comes in after and says,
yeah.
Thinking, yeah, okay, yeah.
We're not going, we go from here, the thinking mind, to here, listening with our heart. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank You're you. Welcome. Okay, it's time to close, and just want to again remind folks about Donna for Sangha Live, and for that they share with me, so much appreciated. And I hope that reflecting on this notion of groundlessness can be a support rather than fear-inducing. See if you can do it from rather than unk, and just be in the flow of life, listening to life rather than figuring it out and being afraid of making mistakes, and then entering into life and having the courage to change the things you can and show up fully. So may our time here together be of support to you, and may our goodness that we create all here together be of benefit, not just to us, to everyone in our lives, and to all beings everywhere in this beautiful planet.